Call the meeting to order. There is not a quorum present at this time, but why don't we go ahead and start with the presentation from the Met Council and their proposed budget.
Can I just ask a question? I mean, I know we don't normally have it done in just an hour, I think, right? So will there be time for questions is what my question is.
My expectation is we'll have time for questions. But I have a hard stop at 11 o'clock.
Right. So I would just urge that we leave at least, 25 minutes, 25,
but I would,
30 minutes.
If the room is available and the testifiers are available, I would, even after I leave, I would suspect that we could continue to question. We'll just pass the gavel off to somebody else.
Mr. Chair and members, again, Judd Shetland, I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Council. The tour for the Metro plant will begin. We're planning on that bus arriving and taking us over to the Metro plant, leaving by 11. So we can go through this presentation as quickly as you would like. I would also like to remind members that I did send out our unified budget on October 23rd. And so the public comment draft has been available for about a month and a half. If there were questions or comments that wanted to be made. So, and Representative Rumbach, if you have additional questions that we're not able to address, I would be more than happy to sit down and talk to you about those whenever you would like. Mary and I can make ourselves available to you at any point. I'd also like to let the commission know that the council will be adopting this tomorrow. And so it's likely that we will have some updated information for you. So if we would like to talk in the next couple weeks or right after the new year, we'd be happy to have that conversation as well.
Thank you.
So just to let you know, Representative Rumbach, that's fine. We have plenty of time to talk at your convenience.
Okay. Well, so welcome. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Great. Well, my name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Council Government Affairs Director, and with me is Mary Bogie, who's our Deputy Regional Administrator and Chief Financial Officer at the Council. And here, consistent with the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Governance statutes, we are here to present the Council's unified capital and operating budget. We do this every year. And so, as I mentioned before, the Council will be adopting this tomorrow. But we wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity to present this. So we're here today, and Mary will move through this pretty quickly. There's a lot of information in here you already know related to what the council's authorities are. And so just tell us to pick up wherever you'd like, okay?
Okay.
And so I'll turn it over to Mary.
Thank you, committee. Again, my name is Mary Bogie, Deputy Regional Administrator and Chief Financial Officer. This presentation is really intended to be high level. Again, we'll come back with more detail if there's places where you'd like us to expound upon. So this first slide starts out with our statutory responsibilities for planning, operations, and grant making. The council adopts policy plans for transportation, water resources, regional parks, and housing. We operate 9 wastewater treatment plants, collecting about 1 million gallons of wastewater daily through the system that includes over 600 miles of interceptor pipe, 60 pump stations, and 200 metering facilities. Our wastewater system is nationally recognized as a successful and efficient operator. The regional transit system provides approximately 85 million rides to serving customers going to work, school, and entertainment. Our Metropolitan Housing Authority provides housing for more than 6,500 families in the metro area and earns the highest rankings available from the Housing and Urban Development for efficient and effective services. The council also provides grant funding through to communities through our regional parks, implementing agencies, our livable community programs. And on to the next slide here. Today we're presenting our budget at what we call our public comment draft budget on October 23rd, as Judd said, the council approved a draft comment or budget for public comment. Please remember that we are on a fiscal year that is January to December, and that's consistent with our city and county governments. And consistent with how local and county governments adopt their budget, we've been taking feedback on our proposed budget since it was adopted on October 23rd. Tomorrow, December 11th, we're scheduled to present our final budget to the council, taking into account the feedback that we've received and also the November forecast and looking for their approval. We anticipate the budget is going to be pretty close to what we're presenting here for the public comment draft, and I'll talk a little bit more about some changes between the public comment draft and what I'll ask the council to adopt tomorrow. So our unified budget also includes our levy amounts and the detailed operating budget, as well as our six-year capital program. So I'll begin to talk with an overall look of our operating budget, and this slide represents the uses in our operating budget by division and function. The 2020 proposed operating budget is $1.2 billion and represents about a 4.1% increase over 2019. We have three operating divisions, with each with distinctive services and dedicated funding resources. The largest, of course, is transportation, and that includes our bus, rail, metro mobility programs, and it's 62% of our overall budget. Environmental services provides our wastewater treatment programs, 27% of our budget. Community development includes our livable communities, parks, and housing programs, and about 10% of our budget. Regional administration provides the common support services for our operating divisions, such as procurement, human resources, finance, payroll, and the costs of regional administration are allocated out to the other operating divisions. OPEB, or other post-employment benefits, reflects our fully funded status of our retiree health care liability, and the earnings on our OPEB fund balance are used to pay the retiree premiums, medical premiums. Our funds are invested with the State Board of Investment for this purpose. The right side of the pie chart shows our budget uses by operations, pass-through, debt service, and OPEB. This distribution year over year pretty much looks the same each year. 17% of our funds are used to pay debt service on bonds that the council issues to support our capital program. About 75% of our debt service pays for wastewater treatment infrastructure that is supported by wastewater fees. Debt service for parks and transit are supported by the council's property tax levy. Pass-through funding primarily reflects our housing, livable communities, and parks programs. And nearly 60% of our operations budget pays for the salaries and benefits of the council staff. This next slide here shows our proposed FTEs, 4,526. That's about 49 fewer than what we had in 2019. Of that 4,000 plus employees, 2,146 of them, or 47%, are bus operators and maintenance employees. So a very labor intense service that we deliver for transit. This next slide shows our funding sources for our operating budget. Again, important to note, this slide year after year looks pretty much the same in terms of the percentage of the funding sources that the council receives to support our operations. So charges for services, the highlighted in blue area, 36%, about a third of our budget. State revenue is about a third of our budget. The federal government contributes $107 million to our operating budget, primarily passing through to our housing authority, $65 million there, but also supporting preventative maintenance of our transit fleet. Property taxes support about 8% of our operating budget. That's primarily funding our debt service and grant programs. Only about 2% funds our operations for the council. Other is primarily investment income, about $16 million from our OPEB plan assets. And again, that revenue from our plan assets is paying for retiree health care premiums. We have a planned use of reserves in operations. That's primarily for transportation. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next couple slides. So next, we'll examine in a little bit more detail our charges for services. Our wastewater charges include our municipal, industrial, and sewer availability charges. The proposed budget includes a municipal wastewater charge increase of $3.6 million. This represents about a $5 increase per residential connection, and the average metro household will see about a $27 increase in their sewer service bill. Of that amount, 55% goes to the council, and the remainder goes to the local municipality. Our retail rates for sewer service to households are about 41% lower than our peer agencies nationally, and six of our nine wastewater regional treatment plants that discharge into the river have received platinum awards from the National Association of Clean Water Agencies for full compliance with their clean water discharge permits. Two plants have over 25 years of full compliance. Charges for services also include passenger fares for transit in the amount of $113 million. Fare revenues and ridership are obviously interconnected, and our regular route bus ridership, like our peers across the nation, is projected to be down from our previous budget. By contrast, Metro Mobility ridership has seen rapid growth over the last 5 years, about a 6% growth each year for Metro Mobility over the last 6 years. Our last fare increase was in October of 2017. It was 25 cents across all modes, and the council is currently working on fare policy. So this slide shows that while bus ridership is down, the blue indicator there shows that it's still really the workhorse of our transit system. The rides for 2020 are projected to be 53 million. Rail ridership remains strong year over year, and Metro Mobility is currently providing about 2.4 million rides. I wanted to spend a little bit of time with the November forecast.
Oh, sure.
Ms. Bogie, just so we have enough time, since we do have the tour, maybe we can make sure we can wrap this piece of up by about 10:30 and then leave time for member questions.
Yep, we'll go as far as we can go, and you can stop us, and we can always come back. All right, so I want to spend a little bit of time with the November forecast. We were a bit surprised, or at least I was a bit surprised, with the forecast for motor vehicle sales tax. While the overall forecast for the state looked very, very rosy for motor vehicle sales tax over the next two bienniums, it was a forecast loss of about $42 million. Surprising because the February forecast was a significant increase, about $57 million over that time period, and our actual receipts so far this year have been pretty strong. And so while this is just a forecast, and it will change again and again before the next biennium, it just continues to show that motor vehicle sales tax is a volatile funding source for our transit operations. So as we think about economics, when gas prices are low and the economy is relatively good, consumers go and they buy cars, and our ridership suffers because they're driving those cars. When gas prices go up and or the economy suffers a little bit, consumers put off those big purchases, and our ridership increases, but motor vehicle sales taxes go down. And so the economics of this as a funding source continue to be volatile for the council in funding transit. So our public comment draft budget reflects the February 2019 forecast. And the budget that I'll ask the council to adopt tomorrow will be adjusted by the amounts shown down towards the bottom there. I take those state fiscal years and I divide each in half, and half a year and half a year, to come up with our calendar year budget impact. And so the budget that I'll ask the council to adopt tomorrow will decrease by $9.2 million. And for the council, that'll be an increased use of reserves in our transit program.
Ms. Bogie, Representative Runbeck, is it specifically to a point? Because I'd like to give Ms. Bogie a chance to get through her presentation. And then.
So I'm just curious, Mr. Chair, what had you expected MVEST would be? It's $506 million, of which you get 60%, so $303 million.
So, Mr. Chair and committee members, yes. So in state fiscal year 2020, this forecast is $5.9 million below the previous forecast, and in 2021, 12.6. And so when we're doing our budget for our public comment and preliminary budget, we base that on the most recent forecast, which is February, and now when we adopt tomorrow, we update it for that November forecast.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rumbeck, again, the February forecast was the forecast that we made the budget agreement on related to the fiscal year 20 and 21 biennial budget. So as you can see, the November forecast changed that pretty significantly, and then the tails budget, again, dropped that by almost 22, $23 million as well. So Just the immediate forecast following the budget agreement is showing not as rosy of a picture
All right.
for us.
All right. Yep. Thank you.
And again, committee members, I want to reiterate that the forecast changes February to November. And we've kind of seen a pattern of the November forecast being a little bit more pessimistic and the February forecast being a little bit more optimistic. And so I absolutely expect that we will see several changes over the next, you know, couple years before we get into that 2022-2023 biennium. So I wanted to break down a little bit to show the outlook on our transportation operations considering the forecast. And so this next slide shows just our bus operations portion of the budget, because bus operations is primarily funded by motor vehicle sales tax and our fare revenues. This reflects current law and does not consider a potential fare increase or other administrative actions that we could take, just taking our proposed 2020 budget and reflecting that out over the next 4 years. So as you've heard me say in the past, we have a structural deficit for our transportation funding, and we've been utilizing reserves over our target balances to balance our financial position, and we are continuing to do that through this budget. Our target reserve for bus operations is a range between 8.3% as a minimum to 12.5% of operating expenses. And as of October of 2019, we have about $84.9 million. Primarily, that builds because of bus driver vacancies. And from the November forecast to the February forecast, we lose about $9 million a year in that forecast, and that causes us to use those reserves more quickly than we had anticipated. And you can see as we get into the biennium 2022-2023, we finally hit that fiscal cliff where we don't have reserves to cover our structural position or our financial position. Again, we will see additional forecasts between now and then, and I absolutely expect that picture to change somewhat.
Hopefully for the better.
Absolutely. Next slide shows our Metro Mobility structural and financial position. In Metro Mobility, in this last legislative session, we received one-time appropriations. Those are shown as green on the chart here. And then as we hit state fiscal years 2022 and 2023, those go away. And so, again, we have a shortage then in our structural position for Metro Mobility. Metro Mobility is primarily funded with general fund, state general fund, and fare revenues.
One thing I want to add to that slide is you see the financial position for fiscal years 22 and 23. That does not reflect what some of you will recall our effort in order to get additional federal reimbursement for medical assistance that we passed 2 years ago. And so that program is just being set up now. We anticipate that we'll get a savings of about $8 million per year. And so that program is just being set up right now. So those savings are not shown in fiscal years 22 or 23. So we would hope and expect, based on our at least our analysis, that those numbers will go down hopefully about $8 million a year.
And finally, then, looking at the rail services, rail services are primarily funded by state general fund, local funds, and our fares. So 50% state, local, after fares are taken into account. Our reserve target balance for our rail operations, 8.3 to 12.5% of operating expenses. As of October 2019, we have about $21 million in reserves projected for the year end. And we currently have enough reserves to push off any deficit well out to 2023. And again, that's subject to change with new forecasts. And so we're feeling pretty good about the structure of the rail system. So this last slide then pulls all together to show the total picture for transportation finance, showing our structural deficit, our one-time state appropriations, and our available reserves above our target fund balances to help us to resolve that financial position. So I'm going to move on to other areas of the budget then, and this next slide shows our proposed property tax levies. This chart shows $88.7 million. That's about a 2% increase over the prior year. So unlike other municipal entities, the council's general purpose levy funds fund less than 2% of our operations. Our debt service is the largest part of our property tax levy, about 63% for transit debt service. We are not this year levying for parks debt service because we have sufficient funds to meet our existing debt service and did not issue debt in 2019 for parks. So livable communities is the other portion of our levy, and that's for our grant programs for tax-based revitalization account, livable communities demonstration account, and the local housing incentives account. The LCA provides funding for communities to invest in local economic revitalization, affordable housing initiatives, and development or redevelopment that connects different land uses and transportation. The program is voluntary. It's incentive-based to help communities grow and redevelop and to address the region's affordable and life cycle housing needs. Next slide just kind of shows where the metro area taxes are split among the several different governmental entities. The graphic shows that counties, cities, school districts account by far the largest portion of the metro tax dollars. The Met Council typically receives about 1.4% of the revenue collected from property taxes in the metro area. The slide shows the estimated impact of our proposed 2% levy on a homeowner with a house valued at $250,000. A homeowner residing within the transit taxing communities will on average pay $52.97 and outside $16.22. As we know, not all things are equal, and individual taxpayers will experience different amounts depending on other factors like increasing home values, their neighbor's house versus their house, and you know, the differences in the taxing communities. I just wanted to also show the metro area and the transit debt service area, seven county metro area minus Hanover, Rockford, New Prague, and Northfield represent the transit taxing area, and that area also receives the transit debt service levy as opposed to our other levies. The council has about $1.6 billion in outstanding general obligation debt. The council is a AAA bond rating from both Moody's and Standards and Poor's, and that means that we borrow at the lowest market rates available. Bonding is our primary funding source for wastewater capital program, whereas transit and parks have other funding sources as well. Wastewater depends almost totally on our wastewater debt. So next slide talks about our capital program. The council has an $8.1 billion capital program over the next 6 years. Our capital program contains both projects or phases of projects for which the council has secured funding and authorized spending. And we have projects or phases or projects that are planned but have not have funding secured, and therefore they are not authorized to be spent upon. Projects remain in the capital program until they are complete, and as shown by the blue highlights there, $2.5 billion, or about 31% of the funding in the authorized capital program, has been spent in previous years on projects that are not yet complete. Of our authorized capital program that are authorized and unspent, about $444 million is anticipated to be spent in 2020. This slide pie chart shows our anticipated funding for the capital program. Again, not all this funding has been secured. Federal dollars make up the largest share of our funding sources at 37%, followed by local resources, 31%, and that really reflects our LRT projects. The council's regional is the council's regional bonding authority, and state is primarily for parks. This next slide shows our future spending from the capital program. Again, that portion of the authorized capital program that has not yet been spent, $1.1 million. As you look at that authorized capital program, you see that it's highly dominated by our wastewater system. About 58% of the current authorized capital program that has not yet been spent is in our wastewater system. As we look at the right side of the chart, our six-year capital plan, That reflects, again, funding for projects that has not yet been secured but is planned over the next 6 years. And that is by far dominated by our transit way systems, 64%. That's our light rail and our bus rapid transit systems that receive both federal funding as well as local funding. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these next slides. I just wanted to give you kind of a feel for what it is that we're spending on in our capital program. And so in the wastewater, we're spending on treatment plants, of course. We just recently required, at the city's request, the Rogers Wastewater Treatment Plant. And so there's several modifications that we need to do to that system to bring it up to the standards that we have in our other wastewater plants. We're beginning a process to perform condition assessment at our Hastings wastewater treatment plant. It's been in service since 1952, and the council has acquired a property to build a new plant, and we need to evaluate the condition of our existing facilities and do a financial analysis to determine the next steps there. We also have interceptor projects. We will be initiating a study of our interceptor improvements needed in the northwest area of the region to serve the growth and potentially divert flow from the Elm Creek interceptor in order to preserve the capacity in the metro plant service area. We've purchased some property in Fridley in order to replace a lift station. We've completed work on a Hopkins system that started over 10 years ago. And we're really working hand-in-hand with Minneapolis on the timing and scope of our East Isles Force Main replacement project. In transit area, we have fleet management. So the total transit fleet is $760 million. Our priority to maintain our fleet, the large bus, the metro mobility, the light rail, and the commuter rail in a state of good repair. Our plan includes not only the buses that the council operates, but also the buses that the suburban transit providers operate. They are also in our capital plan. So let's move on. So you can see over the next 6 years, the purchases and the overhauls being done on our base bus system, our small bus system, and on our transit system. So that's primarily overhauls to keep them in a state of good repair. In terms of transit facilities and customer support, we're doing a number of energy enhancements, heat in our bus stops, new Minneapolis bus garage. We're doing bus electrification infrastructure in our planned, some hoist replacements and improvements in refurbishments of our rail system. Again, transit ways is the largest portion of our planned, the Metro Blue Line and the Metro Green Line rail transit extensions. Parts of those projects and phases of those projects are in the authorized capital program and are currently being worked on, and parts of them are in our anticipated as we are await a full funding grant agreement from the federal government. And finally, we've got parks. We work with the parks implementing agencies. The council does not own parks. We pass through funding both from the state and from our regional bonding to regional parks, both for operations and for their capital. Our regional parks have more than 60 million visits each year. It's a diamond in our system. The regional park system serves the 7-county Twin Cities metro area. We have over 3 million people in that area. Again, 60 million visitors, 56 regional parks, more than 54,000 acres. Our capital program includes some land acquisition, $37 million as well, authorized $8 million, planned $29 million, parks and trails, Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund those pieces of land acquisition. And finally, the park implementing agencies will receive $239 million. That is a formula-based, and you can see by the chart there where that funding will be distributed to the regional parks implementing agencies. And that was as fast as I could talk and walk through.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it. And we do have a quorum. But before we get to the other business of the committee, I thought we'd open it up for questions from members. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And going back to the wastewater charges, slide 7, you said the sewer access charge, I didn't catch what percentage you said, is kept by the Met Council and the rest the city keeps. Could you give me that number again?
So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I was referring to the municipal wastewater charge rather than the sewer availability charge. So the increase in the municipal wastewater charge, of that increase, 55% goes to the council and the remainder to the communities.
But just to clarify, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, related to the SAC charge, the sewer availability charge, there was no increase to that, which is the hookup charge that you would get for.
But cities do add on to that, depending on community.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, yes, they absolutely do. They add to both the sewer availability charge and to the municipal wastewater charge.
And is there a nexus or justification why they do that? Is that for their local infrastructure?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, that is my understanding. That's exactly why they do it. But it often shows up as a Met Council charge, but there's more to the story.
Okay. Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking starting back at 2018 actual, just because I think standard budgeting requires you look at your budget versus your actual spending. So when you take that 2018 actual spending and then you look back 2 years to look at what was proposed or adopted, which was $1,057,000,000 versus the actual $927 million. There's about $130 million fudge factor between what was adopted in 2018 and actual spending in 2018. And my bigger point is that's the numbers we should be looking at. So I suggest that this group begin to take a look, and maybe in spring of 2020, we look at 2019 actual. What was the actual spent versus what was budgeted for 2019? I mean, to some extent, this is a little bit just, you know, it's not tied to anything. So I guess my question is, how come there was such a big difference between 2018, the adopted budget, and 2018 actual, which just ended, it ended a year ago. So so the fudge factor is really interesting.
Representative Rumbeck, what page are you on?
Well, I'm on page 15 of the current proposal, and I pulled up, 2 years ago, is unified budget.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these numbers aren't even close to being anything real, okay? So what's real? And I guess we deserve to know that. So maybe something you haven't looked into yet, but, the budget as proposed versus what the spending actually was for that fiscal year. And we'll be able to catch up with 2019 actual spending in a few months. But that number is important because we need to hold, somebody accountable for something. But that is not how this budget is ever proposed to us. And most, businesses, that's the only thing you look at. What did you budget, and what are your actual numbers against your budget? So that's my big question. And I just wanted to throw that out there. But if you have a response, that'd be great.
So, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I am as well looking at page 15 of the public comment draft budget in the book. As the council is monitoring its budget throughout the year, we most certainly look at our budget to actuals and what's occurring in those cases. So in this case, we're looking at our 2018 actual versus our 2019 adopted. And so really not quite apples to apples, but we can just kind of take a quick look at where those changes are occurring. And if you look at salaries and benefits, between what we spent actually in 2018 and what we adopted in 2019, you'll see that there's a big change in that number, and in fact, most of the changes in that number. So a number of things are impact that. One, we have been short bus drivers for some time, about 130 bus drivers is the most recent number that I've heard. And so that plays a big role in that number. Two, there's additional services in 2019 as compared to 2018 as it relates to transit. The other number that I point to when I run down the list here is our transit programs. That would be where Metro Mobility is. And we have, again, about 6% growth in Metro Mobility. We contract out those services, and that's in that number there. And you'll see, again, a large growth there. So if I just had to pick a couple of things just off the top of my head between 2018 and 2019, those are the couple of things that I would report to, that I would comment on.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Ms. Bogie, I mean, it's all sort of water over the dam here now. But I think in order for the next meeting on budget to be meaningful, we need to know what actual 2019 spending was, you know, and compare that to the adopted budget and so on and so forth. I just think that we, you know, there's explanations that we appreciate, but we don't get them probably because we don't even know what was really... you know, the budget for a given year. So until it's way too late. And so well, anyway.
And Representative Rumbeck, I think that was something we actually asked for last year.
Okay.
As well, because when we look at the proposed budgets going back to 2016, the last couple proposed budgets have been 4.5% and including this one, a 4.3% increase, which is twice the level of inflation assumptions that were used in a November forecast. And so when you look at, and so if, as you said, there was a fudge factor and we spent less than was proposed and we're building upon a proposed, potentially we're going up maybe three times the rate of CPI inflation assumed by MMB. So it is a concern, and I think it's something we brought up in, I recall bringing it up in 18 and disappointed that we don't have more of that now.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, one of the issues that we discussed previously was the use of reserves. And so that is where we then went back and detailed where those use of reserves were going. So that was a question that was asked by the Legislative Commission. We put that in our presentation last year. We put it in our presentation this year. We spent a lot of time with the legislature this last session talking about it. It was a subject of a question that was raised related to a look at our Southwest Transit financial plan where that was arisen. So I think that that what was requested of us, we intentionally made sure that that was included again this year. We that was a conversation we had with the legislative auditor 2 years ago. And so I just want to make sure that the committee members and commission members are aware that we are trying to show that information to the committee, the specific to the request for showing our reserves, so they are in there.
It doesn't get to Representative Runback's concern, though, of actually tracking the proposed to the to the actual spending. Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. Mr. Shetland, I've got on the report itself, Table G1, talks about all of the capital improvement and investment that's being done within the transportation system, particularly light rail and commuter rail. Annually, you provide me an accounting of expenses versus related inbound fees. Is this are these expenses included in that spreadsheet that under the expenses that are listed in that annual report that you give me?
Mr. Chair and Senator Osmick, I will check with Metro Transit. I would guess that they are built into that, but again, this is our proposed 2020 budget. We haven't closed out the 2019 year yet. That will occur obviously at the end of the year, so I can certainly follow up with our staff at Metro Transit who provide those numbers, but that is I would expect that is incorporated into this.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Osmond.
One follow-up question. It was brought to my attention something that happened with our friends at Southwest Transit around State Fair time this year. Southwest has been charging for express service into the state fairgrounds an $8 charge. And it was brought to my attention that Met Council, I don't know who might have made this decision, enforced upon Southwest Transit that they have to have that fee at $6. The result was a $30,000 hole blown in their budget. And my question is, are either one of you aware of this? And second, do you know why that was enforced? And I guess third, if they're $30,000, if Met Council just blew a $30,000 hole in their budget, is there any plan to refill that $30,000 with Met Council funding, because that was going to be paid by the riders at Southwest?
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmick, I'm not aware of it. I think to venture a guess, I would say it's maybe related to having a regional fare policy consistency. And so to have different providers paying for levying a different fare for that similar service, I think is probably concerned about consistency. But I can't tell you for sure, but I'm willing to bet that that's what it came to. It would be similar to Minnesota Valley Transit offering a different rate than what Metro Transit is providing, or Maple Grove Transit or Plymouth Transit. So I would assume that is the reason why that was determined, because we do try to have a regional fare policy that's consistent amongst all providers. But, Senator, I'm happy to ask and find out what that's about.
Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Shetland, I mean, I guess I have concerns over enforcement of a fee that people were more than willing to pay, and now we've got a hole in the Southwest budget. And certainly not all expenses are the same, because Southwest provides service going all the way to the state fair, going all the way out to Carver, where other providers don't have the same, if anything, fuel charges, not to mention time charges and amount of labor required. I guess I have real consistency, having consistency. Somebody once said consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. I don't understand why the Met Council would have a problem with an inconsistent fare, because people pay the fare knowing full well that they're not, when they're getting on a Southwest bus, they're not getting onto Maple Grove bus or a Met Council bus, and there are different fees that apply to it. I just got a real problem with us blowing holes into Southwest budget and not refilling them.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senators, or members of the Commission, I'd be happy to follow up with you on that.
Thank you, Mr. Shetman. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just make note that all of these slides suggest that public transportation, despite the public subsidies, are hemorrhaging cash. It looks like, I recall the last conversation we had about a fare box increase for buses was back in 17, and I think it was two or three or maybe more years that it had been raised or had not been raised since that time. Here we are coming up on 2020, and there's been no adjustment since 2017. Is there a plan by the Met Council to kind of incrementally keep up with changing costs rather than shocking the transit riders with a big increase all at once? I think it's more responsible to incrementally increase the fare box, and I don't know what the deficit is between the actual operation and the fare box itself, but it looks like the buses are losing about $100 million.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hertaus, that is correct. As Mary mentioned, we did raise fares in October of 2017. Previous to that, it had been since 2010 was when the last time that we had raised fares. I can go into more detail with that with you a different time if you'd like. But the council does have a fare policy. I think Mary mentioned in her presentation that we are in the process of looking at that to determine when the next fare increase will happen. So I know we're having that conversation with the council. I don't want to get out in front of the council, but I can at least tell you that is on a front burner to have those conversations related to when we would impose the next fare increase.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Shetman and Ms. Bogie, I have an email from one of the opt-outs, and I share a concern with Senator Osmick in that our opt-outs are somewhat independent, but they were concerned about the allocation of RAMVest and general fund money being appropriated to opt-out transit. And back earlier this year, they were told not to budget any RAMVest or general fund money for the back half of 2019. Do we have money allocated to the opt-outs at a level that is commensurate with Metro Transit and prior agreements for this fiscal year?
Mr. Chair and members, as we went through the budget setting session this last year, there was very little general fund that was distributed to the regional transit system. The vast majority of that went to fill the Metro Mobility hole, as we showed in our table earlier, that there was $13 million provided in fiscal year 19 and 20 and 23.1, I believe, in fiscal year 21. And that all basically went to Metro Mobility. There was about $400,000, I believe, that went to the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority in order to allow them to extend a or continue operating a bus line from Shakopee, I believe, to the Mall of America. So there was no additional general fund that was provided at that point. And so right now, the bus system is reliant basically 100% on the motor vehicle sales tax. So there is no general fund that is going into the regional bus system. And so with that decision that was made, what the council brought forward was a different way to fund the regional transit system through a sales tax that would have been distributed amongst all of the regional bus providers. And the agreement that we landed on was to fill the hole for Metro Mobility and to provide this one-time money to Minnesota Valley Transit. And so that budget agreement is what is in place today. So there is no general fund going to regional bus, including Metro Transit bus. And as we mentioned, we're using reserves to get us through this biennial budget. We have a structural deficit coming in 22-23. And so I sympathize with the suburban transit providers, but we are experiencing the same situation that they are, where we're not having additional funding going into our system through RAMVest or wherever, because it is all coming through the motor vehicle sales tax. And I'll let Mary speak to that if there's any detail that needs to be added, but there's no general fund coming to Metro Transit bus.
Okay, well, and you must be talking above and beyond what the legislature appropriated for the MOA Shakopee pilot program, and you do have the transit taxing district.
Yep, and Mr. Chair, the transit taxing district only pays for capital, and so the Minnesota Valley, Southwest Transit, Plymouth, Maple Grove, they're all receiving the benefit of their capital being paid through that regional transit capital levy, but that also replaces our Metro Mobility vehicles and the bus fleet for us. So there's just a difference between the regional transit capital bonds, which are funded through the property tax in the transit capital levy areas, versus the MBEST that's being collected from the state motor vehicle sales tax that's distributed 36% here, and then the suburban transit providers get a piece of that as well. But either way, there's no general fund that's coming into the bus system.
Okay, members, I have two more on the list, and then we have to reserve a few minutes for the business of the committee. So next we have Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Representative Runbeck brings up a good point about making sure that we true up our budgets between proposed and actual spending. I'm pretty confident they're going to be able to give us that information, but I also want to kind of get it straight in my head. From what I'm hearing you say is you've had to use a lot of reserves to backfill what we're not providing at the legislature to make up for that budget. Is that accurate or a simplistic way to look at it?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that's a really simple way of doing it. As I said, what I was presenting, there is current law, so there are some things that the council can do as well in terms of fare increases or administrative changes.
The forecast again is going to change. It's a forecast by its nature. It changes, and so what I am saying is motor vehicle sales tax is probably not the best. It's a volatile funding source for trying to fund a transit system. And so when we're planning our budgets based on a forecast that comes out in February, and then in November we see a forecast that's much below that, our plans need to change, both in terms of the service that we are providing and how we're funding that.
And Mr. Chair,
thank
you. And I think also it was helpful to hear you say that the salaries and benefits have to also make a big dent in that. That's where a lot of the differences that you're seeing. And you did mention, or maybe it was the chair that mentioned CPI. I know CPI is not always a great indicator of inflation with salaries and benefits with people costs compared to using IPD. So is some of that difference also, a lot of that difference has to do with salary and benefits. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is definitely part of the issue there, that our salaries and that indicator don't tie directly together. But I would also say that our Metro Mobility ridership isn't tying anywhere near any of the factors that we would use in our economic indicators. We are seeing, again, some very rapid growth year over year in Metro Mobility, and that is our highest cost service to deliver.
And Mr. Chair, one more point in question. I know you're having a really tough time finding drivers. I know school districts are too, and they end up being able to pay a little bit more. So you're in that market competition for those scarce resources that are out there. And I also I hear what folks are saying about the suburban transit providers, and maybe we really do need to kind of dig into those numbers a little bit more too, because it's my understanding that they're sitting on a lot more reserves than Metro Transit is. So I'm sure they're going to be fine, but maybe we have to open that discussion.
Thank you. And Representative Joachim, just for clarification, I brought up CPI because that was the index being used by MMB. So with that, Senator Dibble, you have the last questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I forget, my ears perked up a little bit when you mentioned the East Isles project that's ending. I think that's the first I've heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know more about that. There was just a lot of work done in that area, so I'm not sure what's being done. I would appreciate a briefing on that and a better understanding of how you're engaging the community on that project, because there's a lot of impacts. And we've had a kind of a checkered record of our sewer projects in those neighborhoods.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we'd be happy to do that outside of this meeting to give you more detail on that.
And I don't appreciate hearing about that for the first time in this hearing, just for the record. My question relates back to some of the points that Mr. Shetnin was making about the deficits we're facing. I'm sorry for joining late, but on the slide deck handout, I'm looking at page 14, the second box that shows the transportation structural and financial position for the coming years. Can you just help me understand this slide just a little bit better, and then my question will come from that?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I'm just going to go back here real quick because they all build up to that slide. So as you can see in slide 11, I'll let Mary do it. Sorry. There you go.
Let's
She's
go
our
back,
finance
back
director.
One more. So the slides that I've presented there, we're attempting to show the new forecast and the impact that it has on our budget, and specifically on our transportation budget. And so the motor vehicle sales tax over the next 4 years, as compared to the February forecast, is a $42 million loss over those years. So when I convert that to a calendar year basis, that means in our calendar year 2020 budget that I'm going to ask the council to adopt tomorrow, we've got a $9.2 million additional hole, 1.1 to the transit providers and 8.1 to the council services. So as we move then and look at how that impacts bus operations, which is primarily funded from motor vehicle sales tax, receives no general fund, and then fare revenues, we have a position where our base revenues, and that's again based on current law and not assuming a fare increase, and again There's levers on that we can use in terms of fare increase in service that could change what this picture looks like in the out, but it just based on today's budget and then moving forward. It shows, again, that we've been in a structural deficit position in our bus operations for several years, and that we are using available reserves above our target fund balance in 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023 to help offset that and leave us with a financial position that you see that we're actually in pretty good shape for this 2020, 2021. But when we hit 2022 and 2023, there's some major funding issues here. So this chart reflects our regular route bus and also our contracted services bus and our transportation planning funds. Metro Mobility is not funded by MVEST. It's funded by State General Fund and fare revenues. And in this case, we've received one-time non-base appropriations in 2020 and 2021. And as those go away in 2022 and 2023, again, we're facing a deficit for Metro Mobility. And then the last slide there was on light rail, as well, light rail and commuter rail has a small deficit in our structural position that we're able to fund with available reserves. And so mostly good. And then the overall picture just brings all of those together.
So, Mr. Chair, my question is very basic. It's intended maybe to inform the public because these are all numbers. And so I'd like to hear more about a practical implication of what this all means for the next biennium. What does it mean in terms of our ability to build and operate the envisioned bus rapid transit lines? I'm aware of the Hennepin Avenue proposal, the D line coming down from the north side, the Lake Street proposal, the Gold Line, which is a highway BRT, and others. And then I just wanted to make one statement or get reaction to a statement after I hear the answer to that.
Right. Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, it's concerning to say the least. I think.
And also regular route bus service.
Right. And as what we've had plenty of conversations about where we're at with Metro Mobility recently. And I think folks understand, and I mentioned earlier, Senator, that the Metro Mobility figure for the next biennium does not include the additional medical assistance funds that we feel will get reimbursements for to the tune of about $16 million over that biennium. I think the legislature and folks are aware, we've spent a lot of time even in the interim with some of you talking about the impacts of Metro Mobility. However, what has happened with this new forecast that has come out, it has pulled forward our structural issue in regular out bus forward into the 22-23 biennium, where it becomes much larger. And so when you look at that and try to put an overlay of what our regional transit investment picture looks like, it means that we, in order to just operate the service we have today, we need some serious assistance from the legislature in order to make that work. We, however, have a plan for what we would like to invest in the region for regular route bus, for Metro Transit, for our light rail system related to the Southwest line and the current lines we have, for our suburban transit provider partners. We have brought forward a plan that would have a sales tax that would be able to address these structural deficits but also make those investments in lines like the D line, the B line, the E line, the Gold Line, and make sure that we are planning for our region as it's growing. So I think you're looking at two very contrasting situations. One, if we go forward in the 22-23 session as is, we're in trouble to be able to maintain the service that we have today. And so when you couple the regular out bus deficit that we're bringing forward with Metro Mobility, which I beat this point to death with our friends who have done our Metmo 101 tour recently, is that there's both state and federal mandates related to Metro Mobility, and we are expanding service. We've added Lakeville just this last year, which I think is important that we did that. But that also comes along with a subsidy per ride of $25 per ride. where you add, when you look at bus service, it's somewhere between $2.50 to $3. And so we have to figure out a better way to fund our transit service, because it's getting pretty heavy out there for us right now.
Thank you. And just one final wrap up, Mr. Chair. So what I hear you say is that basically we're not going to be able to add any more bus rapid transit lines. We'll probably have to shrink our regular out bus service. All the suburban opt-outs who want more and expanded service, you know, we have the pilot, and we have, you know, sending some new service over to Dakota County Community College. Those kinds of things won't be able to be sustained. I would just caution us against looking solely to fare increases to make up these holes. We're asking, you know, the users of the system to totally shoulder these holes. We're going to have the effect of keeping that burden on those who are least able to pay. They just simply won't be able to ride the system, and the system will suffer ridership decreases that probably won't be recovered. And I would just call our attention to the fact that we haven't increased the gas tax appreciably. And, you know, since 2008, and before that it was 20 years, in 2008 it wasn't nearly enough. And if you compare fare increases to the gas tax increases that we've done, you know, if we were to keep pace with gas tax increase, and we all agree that our road system is lacking, I saw an analysis once that showed that not only have fare increases outpaced inflation, but they've outpaced gas tax, such that if gas tax were to have kept pace, it'd be like 50 cents more than it is right now. So, and don't tell me that roads aren't subsidized, because they're heavily subsidized by now the general fund, and of course property taxes, which are taxes of general purpose. So I'm not interested in the transit subsidy argument, because it doesn't hunt. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick, I know you wanted to ask a question. We're short on time. We can either follow up with the Met Council directly, or maybe the new chair can schedule a follow-up budget meeting, since we really have no real authority over this budget other than informational. So,
well, I recognize that, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and I won't ask my question, but I'll just make a statement that maybe we can follow up as public safety on our transit systems is incredibly important. It's a big concern to people utilizing the system, where people are getting the snot kicked out of them. They're being shot. It's a mess. And people in my district and the suburbs are kind of shy away from our transit system, and I would like to see it reflected more in this budget, and I failed to see that, but we'll proceed with the meeting.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Before we move on to the election of a chair, we have the minutes from November 28th of 2018 and November 21st of 2019. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
By Senator Osmick, second by Representative Hertas. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Next, we have the election of the new chair and vice chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move for the Senate co-chair. I would move Senator Pratt be elected as co-chair. I'm not sure we'd have to do it again, because Senate hasn't changed.
Senator Osmick, the chairmanship goes to the House. I'd like to vote on the House first and then vice chair second.
So be it.
So do we have a nomination for chairs? Representative Runbeck.
Mr. Chair, I nominate John Kosnick, Representative Kosnick, for chair.
Okay, we have Representative Kosnick has been nominated. Do we have any other nominations?
Mr. Chair, nominate Representative Sandy Mason.
Thank you. Representative Joachim, we have Representative Mason. Are there any other nominations for chair? Any nominations for chair? Are there any other nominations for chair? Okay, seeing none, nominations are closed. What do we normally give a few minutes for addresses, or
no.
Do either of the candidates want to take a couple of minutes to speak?
Mr. Chair, I would accept the nomination.
Okay, Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason, do you have anything that you'd like to say?
To say? Just that I think the Met Council has been very important to me. I've had past experience both as a city council member and many years on the Transportation Committee, and I think typically it's really helpful to have somebody from the majority party have the chair.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of Representative Kosnick say aye.
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 All those in favor of Representative Mazin say aye.
Aye.
Roll call? Or?
It's, no hands. The chair can't decide, so we'll just do a division. All those for Representative Kosnick, raise your hand. All those for Representative Mazin, raise your hand. It's the chair's. The chair did not vote. It is the chair's count that Representative Kosnick received 4 votes. Representative Mazin received 3 votes. Representative Kosnick has been elected chair. Representative Kosnick, do you want to take this, and I'll let you run the vote for vice chair.
Thank you to the committee. Election for the vice chair. Are there any nominations for?
Mr. Chair, I vote Senator
Osbick
elected vice chair.
Senator Osbick nominates Senator Pratt. Any other nominations? I do not hear any other nominations. Senator Pratt has been nominated. Any comments, Senator Pratt?
I accept the nomination.
Senator Pratt accepts the nomination. You just do all in favor of Senator Pratt co-chairing the committees, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Senator Pratt is elected the vice chair, co-chair. Members, the next meeting will be Tuesday, January 21st, 2020, 10 a.m. in room 200. In the state office building right here.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, for that agenda, I mean, we had a very short meeting here. Mm-hmm. The issue of bus driver shortages really is a very big one, has a lot of complexity to it. We'd like answers. We'd like to know what's going on and how many are being hired, all that good stuff. So leave time for that.
Representative Rumbach, that's noted for when we put the agenda together. Any other comments from committee members? With no further business, the meeting is adjourned.